Welcome to the Uplifting Content Podcast. I'm your host, Ione Butler, and the founder of Uplifting Content. And every Tuesday, I'll share with you conversations with remarkable guests on a wide range of topics. My goal with this podcast is to introduce you to new people, ideas, and techniques that provide value and insight, which I hope you find uplifting. Today, let's talk about the art of negotiation with Chris Voss.
Well, you know, one of the ways really is, and the book starts right off with it, like how to elegantly say no. Like, you know, you have to say no. You have to be able to say no, not to the person, not to the situation, but to different deal points, if you will, or to things that won't work. A lot of times you can have a better deal by saying no to the things that won't work. So for two reasons, you got to be able to say no to get to a good solution. And then the other thing is there's a percentage of people out there, probably about 25%, you know, they're going to hammer you till you've said no to them multiple times.
Hello, everyone. So this week, I have decided to share another one of my favorite episodes from the Uplifting Content Archive. It is my conversation with the amazing Chris Voss, a former FBI hostage negotiator. And I first learned of him, a friend had recommended his book, Never Split the Difference. And I was immediately hooked on this book. I binge listened to the audiobook and was just obsessed with it. And then I played it on repeat immediately after that. And in that time, I was working with a new assistant who had set up a meeting with Chris to do this interview for the podcast. But she hadn't put it in my calendar. She'd put it in her calendar, but not mine. So she knew that it was scheduled, but I had no idea. So I'm this massive Chris Voss fan, and I'm driving in my car, listening to his book for the second time on repeat. And I get a phone call, and it's like, "Hi, Ione, this is Chris Voss." And I was like, "What?" He's like, "Yeah, we're supposed to have an interview today." And I was just, I was really starstruck and like super excited, but also very confused. And it was just terribly apologetic. It was such an awkward situation. I was like, I'm so sorry. I'm really excited to talk to you, but I had no idea this was happening. There's obviously something's gone terribly wrong on my end, and I'm sorry. But can we reschedule? And he was very forgiving, awesome guy. We rescheduled, had this fantastic conversation. And it's been really lovely sort of getting to know him since I've gone to one of his workshops. You know, we've like caught up over lunch and stuff like that. He's just such a cool, fun guy to know. Just fascinating and very interesting. So I hope you enjoy this conversation. I would highly recommend you get the book Never Split the Difference. I go on and on about it in this episode too. It's a really great book, not just for, you know, if you're in a business environment and you need to negotiate. It's just a good book to help you understand how to communicate and work with people just in your day-to-day life. Just having these skills are really essential, and not from a manipulative standpoint, but just let's just be able to work together and get what we want in a way that's not douchey. So without further ado, please enjoy this conversation with myself and Chris Voss on the art of negotiation.
Chris, thank you so much for joining us today.
It's my pleasure. Absolutely my pleasure. Thank you.
My pleasure too. Please could you, I like to have people sort of say in their own words what it is that they do and introduce themselves. So if you could do that before I start to fangirl over the book.
I help people be absolute rock stars at negotiation and be happy and have more and have a ball. I was the FBI's lead international kidnapping negotiator, but what I really did was I coached negotiations all over the world. The way we did kidnappings, we coached people so the bad guys didn't know we were there. Mm. There's a tremendous advantage to that. So I'm pretty good at negotiation coaching.
Yes, yes, I'm pretty sure you are. So just to give everyone a heads up, I read Chris's book that he's got in the background there, Never Split the Difference. I didn't actually read. I listened to the audiobook. Living in LA, I do a lot of listening to stuff in the car because it's like a little university. And I loved it. A friend had recommended it. Listened to the whole thing. It was one of the audiobooks that I would get out of the car and carry on listening on my phone and then come home and be cooking in the kitchen with it playing. It was one of the ones I couldn't stop listening to. And then I finished it a couple of weeks ago and then started it immediately again to listen to it again. So that's why I'm super pumped about talking to you, because I just want to kind of have people just understand how powerful it is just to have techniques to, the title of this is to get what you want without being a jerk. And what I love about the book is it's not about manipulating people. It's about getting all the information that you can, creating a relationship with somebody so that they can trust, so that you can have a dialogue, and then using techniques to kind of to get things on your terms. So that's what I really loved about it. So many questions where to start. First of all, in the book, you talked a little bit about how you got into it, volunteering at the suicide prevention helpline and that type of stuff. But what is it like? Why did you want to get into it? Were you always a master negotiator? Like, what was that pull?
No. I mainly wanted to get into it because I wanted to stay in and around crisis response. I'd been on the SWAT team. And, you know, like, so to me, every bad thing that's happened in my life has led to something great, fantastic. So I had no idea how much more I was going to like being a negotiator than I ever liked about being in SWAT. I had a knee injury, and the knee injury caused me to look elsewhere. And, thank God, hurting my knee was one of the best things that ever happened to me, because negotiation was so much more incredible. And I've negotiated more sieges and cases than any SWAT guy has ever been in actual and operated in a siege. You know, like the SWAT guys, they lay around in the dark while the negotiators talk. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we talk people out, and the SWAT guys, you know, receive them when they come out. So I got to do my thing more, and then it was more satisfying and more interesting. And plus, you know, I'm still doing it. I'm having fun doing it in crazy other ways now, like in business and helping people and everything they do.
So you have the Black Swan Group, which is your company that is teaching. Is it more corporations, or, and you also, you're at universities, right? That's teaching people these techniques in negotiation.
Well, and we're doing more and more on an individual level. Now we're bringing out a lot of training to help people get better as individuals. But, you know, I got a team. I got a great team. I mean, the old saying, you want to go fast, go alone. You want to go far, go with the team.
Yeah.
I mean, I got great people around me. And interestingly enough, the best coach on our team is my son, Brandon, the director of operations. And if you'd been dealing with a hostage negotiator since you were 2 years old, you'd be pretty good at it, too.
Yes, that's awesome. You mentioned him in the book. So could you then tell us some of the techniques that you teach in the art of how to get what you want without being a jerk?
Well, you know, one of the ways really is, and the book starts right off with it, like how to elegantly say no. Like, you know, you have to say no. You have to be able to say no, not to the person, not to the situation, but to different deal points, if you will, or to things that won't work. A lot of times you can have a better deal by saying no to the things that won't work. So for two reasons, you got to be able to say no to get to a good solution. And then the other thing is there's a percentage of people out there, probably about 25%, you know, they're going to hammer you till you've said no to them multiple times. So, and it's that stupid. Like, they have to hear no twice before they'll make a deal. So if you got to hear, if my criteria to get the deal is I got to say no to you nicely twice, then I'll just say it sooner and we'll get the deal sooner.
Yeah.
And then, you know, how to say no without offending the other side, how to say no without being a jerk, you know. Don't pound the table. Don't call names. Like, somebody has asked me, what's the biggest difference between hostage negotiation and business negotiation? Hostage negotiation was more civil.
Wow.
You know, I have heard of people in business deals screaming at each other, calling each other names, pounding on the table, storming out of rooms. Like, that never happened in hostage negotiations, ever. Like, you'd be shocked when you really listen and listen to understand, not to agree, but to understand how quickly people calm down and actually start talking. Mm. And then the other thing that a lot of people don't realize is hostage negotiators have repeat customers.
Really?
Yeah. So we don't lie, you know, we don't mislead, because the hostage taker that I talk out, somebody else is going to see him again. They're going to go to jail. they're going to get back out on the street. There was a siege in Baltimore once where a guy who was wanted for some really bad things, the negotiators were a little rattled when they first got him on the phone. And he said, hey, you know, you're not doing a good job with me. You're supposed to be establishing rapport.
The hostage negotiator said that to him.
The bad guy said
Yeah. Sorry, I meant. Wow.
And what had happened was he'd been in a siege before, and they talked him out. And if they'd have lied to him or misled him, then the next person that saw him, you know, it would have gone bad. So, you know, believe it or not, I come from a tradition of a long-term relationship, and a good reputation is important.
I wonder, because you mentioned in the book, there's a story of a woman who, she was working with a guy who was a bit of a misogynist, and he kind of called her out of the blue to discuss stuff, and she couldn't like hold her anger back, and that one didn't go too well. And I feel like I find that very hard, especially when I'm getting passionate and heated about something, in that moment to like calm down and come at it from not that aggressive, angry place, banging your fists on the table. Like, do you have any advice on that?
Well, yeah, there's a couple things because I get mad sometimes myself too. And as soon as I get mad, then it ruins my ability to negotiate, and I get mad. And I was thinking about being in a negotiation with somebody I really didn't like, because this person, I just can't trust them. Now there's no problem with doing a deal with somebody you can't trust. Just don't kid yourself about the fact that you can't trust them, and just proceed, you know, eyes wide open. But as I was going through it, I couldn't think of the right things to say. And I remember saying to myself, look, actually, the only reason I'm in this negotiation is because I'm doing well. So I'm actually lucky to be talking to this person at all. And instantly my mood changed. Now there's some psychological data, some really strong information that says that our brain works up to 31% better in a positive frame of mind. So, you know, being positive is just not, you know, because you're happy-go-lucky. You're actually smarter. And that was what instantly happened with me in that instance. I thought, you know, I'm lucky to be in this conversation. And so that helps me a lot. The other thing, too, is like genuine curiosity. If I really am really interested and curious, almost as if the conversation is an adventure, because that puts you in a good frame of mind. It's very close to the mental state of flow, actually. And your brain is more accurate. So if I can get out of being offended by your insanity and just be actually curious about it, it's also an instant hack to not getting upset in a negotiation.
That's really great advice. Taking the personal thing out of it, and just trying to make that your intention, just understanding. And you don't have to agree, but understanding where that person's coming from.
Right.
I do that sometimes, and it does take it off me. You must be a master in relationships. How does that work with me? Come on. I mean, you're saying that your son has known you his whole life, and so he kind of probably knows what's going on. But what's that like? Can you pretty much get whatever you want? I mean, you can talk down big hostage takers.
Well, it depends upon two things. And the biggest thing is where you're coming from. I mean, Adam Grant's a brilliant author. He's written several books, originals, give and take, genius. And he wrote an article once called The Dark Side of Emotional Intelligence. I mean, if you get good at this is what sociopaths are best at. Right. Daniel Goleman identified three kinds of empathy. He said one of them is cognitive empathy, which is just completely understanding your emotional wiring. He says that's what sociopaths are absolutely best at. Sociopaths are good at identifying emotions. They might not feel them all. You don't have to feel them to identify them. So you can use your powers. If you're really good at this, you can use your powers for evil and not good. I mean, empathy is a powerful, powerful thing. If you wrap your mind around it. And it could also be, you know, it keeps people from killing themselves. It's what we use on a hotline. I could talk somebody off a ledge in 20 minutes with empathy. So yeah, it's powerful stuff, and you can get good at it.
Did you ever hear of the book The Game? It's about like pickup artists. Did you ever hear of that or know of it?
I have not. I might go out and get it.
not assuming that you need it, or this would be something that you have read, because it's quite manipulative, and that's why it was a story of a guy about how to pick up women, basically, and it became this whole thing in sort of in San Francisco and in LA and in London and all the major cities. Guys would go out, and they probably still do, and like teach all these techniques to sort of manipulate women. And it's genius. It's basically what you're saying. You can understand how people's minds works and how that, but the way from kind of looking at how they would go about it, it just seemed kind of really nasty and seedy to me. Like not the best use of those techniques.
Well, and then that goes exactly to like, what's your motivation? You know, these are powerful tools. What are you using them for? Mm. If my motivation is because I want a long-term great relationship with you, mm-hmm. You know, there was a famous Goldman Sachs executive, Gus Levy, who used to say, greedy, yes, but long-term greedy. Mm. I mean, if I really am a mercenary, if I am a complete sociopath, in my business dealings, I realize that we need to be partners for a very long time, because there's a tremendous amount of prosperity that comes from long-term partnerships. Mm-hmm. So what am I really after? If I'm after a long-term relationship where we both prosper, mm. You know, if the pickup artists, you know, these are discarding people along the way, having mm-hmm. no intention for a long-term relationship. I want to use you in a moment and move on. Mm. Problem with that is it catches up with you. Mm-hmm. Even if you're like that, I mean, you have to eventually leave, because mm-hmm. your reputation precedes you. You know, people, they precede you really fast. Do the old saying, do one thing right, 3 people know about it. Do something wrong, 12 people know about it. Mm. So if you're short-term objective only, you better be prepared to move to another city, because before long, people are going to know and they're not going to be interested anymore.
It's a very good point. It's very easy to burn bridges quickly. So here's a question. I met a guy in a supermarket in Denver a couple of weeks ago, and I said, oh, how are you? He said, oh,
was he carrying a copy of the game? Did you know?
No, but I told him to get Never Split the Difference. he was this young kid, and I said, how's it going? He was like, oh, it's all right. I was like, why? Only all right. And he was like, well, I'm here late. I'm supposed to be at college. Like, this is kind of a job I need to get through college or school or something like that. But they keep giving me all these late shifts. And I told them that I can't, because I'm late for college, the school the next day, and they keep giving me all these late shifts and stuff. And I was like, you need to get Never Split the Difference. He said, I basically need to have a conversation with them. And I was like, yes, you do. But before you do,
thank you.
Take out Never Split the Difference. My pleasure. I'm telling everyone about it. So just to kind of give people an idea of how you work, what if, for that kid that goes and has a sit down with his colleagues about you know, his schedule, that they're ignoring him, he's been asking them over and over again to give him times that fit his schedule and things that he can do, how would you advise somebody to take that conversation?
All right, so I'm going to give you a saying, and then we'll flip it and look on the other side. Mm-hmm. You know, one of my students at Georgetown once said that his father told him, never be mean to someone who could hurt you by doing nothing.
Interesting.
So, which is great advice. And if you think about it, then you realize that anybody you talk to, that covers everybody. Mm-hmm. Like, who, if you're talking to them, if they simply choose not to cooperate, they could hurt you. If that's true, then the flip side is true. Everybody that you talk to could help you if they felt like it. Mm-hmm. So now what makes them feel like it? Yeah. Well, it's a combination of two things. It's being likable, you know, and there's a difference between being likable and needing to be liked, which I think you probably nail that, because you are enormously likable. Thank you. But I don't think you make yourself emotionally vulnerable to needing to be liked, because it does make you very vulnerable, and it makes people easily exploit you. So fine line there. But then when the purpose to establish empathy is to get empathy in return. So I want Stephen Covey's advice: seek first to understand, then be understood. Right. Let's look at Covey, the mercenary, not because he was a nice guy, because if I want to be understood, then I need to understand you first. It actually saves time.
So you would say that kid would go in and then try and understand where the management is coming from, not giving him his shifts,
right?
The things that he's asking for. So he would come in and ask questions about that.
And then say, all right, look, you guys are under a lot of pressure. and you're giving me shifts because I'm reliable. You know that you're giving me shifts because I show up, you know, and you're having trouble finding people that show up. And so demonstrate the understanding. And then there's one final move. If they don't throw something on the table at that point in time, which the percentage of time is about 75% of the time, that they're just going to go ahead and solve the problem for you. And which, like, if you had a gambling system that works 75% of the time, you'd take it to Vegas and pretty soon Steve Wynn would be working for you. but then at that point, once you've laid it all out, then you say to the other side, so how am I supposed to get my education if I can't get to class? Boom. Right. And then that's also an empathy inducing statement, a how question. If they're going to help you, again, my son, he referred Brandon, says this is forced empathy. A good how question. I'm going to make you look at my situation and see the dilemma that I'm in. Now, if you don't help me there, then I now know that you're never going to help me.
Right.
Which now makes me smarter.
Mm-hmm.
Is it a long-term relationship mm-hmm. here? Do I stick around or do I start looking for another job?
Mm.
And if I'm working with the right people, then they're going to help me solve that problem. It's like, and it's any bad relationship you're in, mm. you know, get out of that relationship instead of continuing to try to make it better. And I'll do a side note for women in negotiation, because there are a lot of companies out there that have a reputation for paying women less than they pay men. And so, so I'm your dad. And you say, how do I get them to pay me more? And I would say, that'd be like asking me, how do you get your boyfriend who abuses you to treat you better? Mm-hmm. Get out of the relationship. Mm-hmm. If you're working for a company that pays women less than men, they're a bad company. Not only is it a bad relationship, but they're going to go out of business because that's stupid, especially in today's day and age. It's one of the reasons why the Fortune 500 is going to turn over by almost 50% over the next 10 years, because there's a lot of bad strategy out there.
Mm.
So you need to quit that company before they go out of business, because it's dumb to pay people less based on their gender. That's just dumb.
I have this question for you, though. I have found, and I found it in myself, and I've seen it in other women, that so I think it sucks that women don't get paid as much as men. However, if somebody's going to come in and offer themselves as a lesser price, and if somebody isn't going to negotiate themselves, if women don't negotiate as much or as hard as men to get their salary up, why would a company go, okay, if you're offering this, I'm going to pay you that much more? Do you know what I mean? So I don't know that it's always like a malicious company, but my thing is, it's like, is it that the companies are bad for not offering, or is it that women need to up their value and up what they're coming in with?
So there's two parts to that. There's a difference between, are they dumb or are they malicious?
Mm.
All right. So there are a lot of them out there that are just dumb. They're mm. like, I didn't know I should pay you more. You didn't ask.
Mm.
That's still dumb
mm.
because you're not paying attention to your employees. You're not developing, you're not nurturing them. You're not committed to them. And I got no financial interest in Intuit. I recently spoke to Intuit, the QuickBooks people, the Quicken people. And at the conference I was at, they were all about, how do you develop your career? How do you get better? How do you get better? How do we help you evolve? How do you help you develop? And they had several of their male managers up there saying about how they took steps down to move up another ladder. I mean, they were just talking nonstop. The conference was, how do I help you develop your career? Our company will prosper if we develop you as human beings. Now that's smart.
Mm.
Now it's entirely possible that you're not working for a company that's not malicious. They're just dumb.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So interesting cat that I met here in town. Sorry for my vernacular. It's from all sorts of eras and decades. And
I love your accent. Yeah, it's fascinating.
So friend of mine, I think the world of Ned Colletti, former manager of the Los Angeles Dodgers, took the Dodgers from worst to first in his first season there. I get Ned to come in to talk to my class about negotiation. He says, and I just met him. And he was gracious enough to come in. We just met. He says, what do you want me to say? What do you teach? I said, I don't care what you say. Whatever you say, it's going to be interesting because you're good at what you do. And he was a good guy. So a couple of talks about negotiating Barry Bonds deals, all sorts of great deals. Somebody says, Ned, you must get paid a lot. How do you negotiate for yourself? And he says, you know, I never really negotiated that hard for myself. I always relied on my employer to pay me what I was worth. And I went, stop. Because that's exactly what women are accused of doing. And clearly that's not exactly what you do. So what are you doing? What Ned is real good at is not demanding money, but walking away if he doesn't get paid.
Yes.
And he got, when he got offered the Dodgers job by Frank McCourt, the then owner of the Dodgers, in the last moment, McCourt is doing every single trick in a book to try to get an advantage on Ned. And he literally offers him make the job offer to him like 10 minutes before the clock was going to run out, because by Major League Baseball rules, you have to make it by a certain time, players and managers. And he made the offer, and Ned looked at him and started to pack up his briefcase and put his papers in his briefcase and got ready to leave. And Frank McCourt's sitting there just watching him, and Ned packs his briefcase and head for the door. And McCourt says, what are you doing? He said, I'm leaving. I'm not working for you for that. I'm not working for you for that. In fact, what about a counter offer? No. He says, I know what the numbers are. I know what you're paying. I know you're paying this guy too much. I'm not asking for that much, but I'm not working. And this wasn't the first job that Ned offered to walk away from. His first job in baseball, same thing. He was in a desperate situation. So it's not a matter of whether or not he had a good place to go. He just really good at gently saying no. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the element that a lot of people, if men and women, it happens to be women are getting tagged with it these days. I don't think they're the only ones that struggle with that. But the ability to say no nicely, which is what I talked about before, it's a hard thing to do. But that's the real key to negotiation of how can I say no, because without calling names. Like, because Ned didn't scream at Frank McCourt, said, you cheap so-and-so, you know, you're Yara. Didn't yell, didn't holler, didn't do anything. Just quietly stood up, started to walk away. And when he stopped him, he said, what are you doing? He said, I'm leaving. Mm-hmm. So the ability to say no gently, I think, is a key term, mm-hmm. key talent.
But here's the thing, though. If somebody undervalues themselves anyway, if somebody's going in, and it's happening, like, it's difficult because in the acting industry, for example, you've all got agents that are negotiating everybody's different rates, right? So if somebody's going in and they're like, that's my rate based on my previous stuff and I'm going to have that, and then somebody else goes in and like, that's my rate because that's what I've done, and the person that has this rate's okay with it, like, then that's kind of a different situation for Ned, who you were talking about, who knows his value. It's just like, how do you negotiate if you don't know what the options are? And I think that's why your book is so fantastic, because it's like, rather than going in with low rates, you do your research, you find out, you know, you talked about the guy who graduated from the law thing, and he kind of went in with a low ball offer and then realized that they start people up on a much higher offer, but he'd gone in demanding a thing. And so I guess it's then for anyone, do your research, I guess, and find out what the ballpark is. And then you also say to offer ranges rather than say, this is what I would like. You offer a range with the lower offer being the higher offer being your minimum. You kind of I forget now.
Well, if you throw a range out, whichever end of it favors the other side, that's what they're going with.
Yeah, they're going to go with the lower one, yeah.
So, you know, whatever it is. Like, one student in my class at USC on an internship, he knew that the rates were from $18 to $24 an hour. He wanted 21. He thought, I'll give him a range, and they'll meet me in the middle. And they said, okay, well, I know the market is $18 to $24 an hour. And they said, okay, you get 18.
Right, so you should have said 21 to 24.
Or yeah. You want 21, say 21 to 24. Then they feel good. Then they feel like they compromised. Mm-hmm. Do some research, but not too much. Because whenever you're competing and they're trying to commoditize you, and you talked about actors being commoditized. All right. So it's never a pure commodity. There's always, in every negotiation, where there's multiple players, there's a favorite and a fool. Now, if you're the fool and you offer a lower rate, then you were a fool for doing that. Because the odds were against you. If you're the favorite and you offer a lower rate, first you got to test a little bit. You know, if you're the favorite, they might give you your rate if you say whatever your rate is and they say that's high. And then you look at them and say, look, but how am I supposed to work for less? They're going to give you one or two answers. They're going to say, because if you want the job, you'll take it. At that point in time, you know, you have a deal. Or they'll say, well, you know, and they'll soften up a little bit. That how am I supposed to accept that is actually the great probe of the other side's position as to whether or not there's any let. If you've got them, that's the only question you can ask if they're at their limit without driving them away from the table. If they have any latitude, they'll give it to you. If they don't, they'll look at you and say, because if you want it, you'll take it. Which means you're still in the negotiation and you probe them as fully as you can. Now you're more fully informed. Whether you take it or not, it's still your option. They're still giving you the option. When they say, because if you want it, you'll take it, that means the deal is still on the table. And that's why that's one of the great ways to gently say no and force empathy into the situation and find out whether or not there's any latitude to negotiate.
Got it. I like that. Could you tell us a little bit about the courses that you have? Because I'm interested in taking them. So I'd just love you to share a bit about what you have going on. If you've got like live person events, in-person events, or the online stuff, it sounds like you're trying to do.
Well, we got a newsletter that comes out once a week that's free. And it's got great succinct stuff in it that comes out every week. It's called The Edge. You can find it on our website, blackswanltd.com. There's a text to sign up feature that I can tell you about later if you want me to or whenever.
I can put the description in the comments as well for you. So yeah.
So that's a free way to start out. We're developing some really robust training with a company that's going to go online probably in about 2 months. But in the meantime, you know, The Edge has got a lot of stuff in it. The newsletter has got a lot of, there's a whole catalog of specific articles on the website that you can go back through and look for stuff that fit to your specific situation. And you can subscribe to it. We've got 1 day training sessions. We're getting ready to do one in New York City, October 23rd, I think. We'll be back here in Los Angeles in the spring. So
you're
we've
in
got
LA?
Open enrollment. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm in LA.
Yeah, I love LA.
Yeah. Awesome. For some reason, your accent just did not make me think you were here. So, I mean, mine doesn't either.
Yeah, who's pointing fingers here, right?
That's hilarious. Okay, cool. So you have the in-person events as well.
Right, right. And we've got some stuff on YouTube. You know, if you go to our website, we've got a lot of resources that supplement the book that are free. And then we're gonna come out with some more stuff. If you need coaching, we're not cheap. So, but if you got anything, we get results. So yeah. Again, our best coach, my son Brandon, was coaching a guy in a job negotiation. They jumped in. They promoted him 2 levels.
Wow.
So people, if you're a hardworking, decent human being, then you deserve everything that you can get. Because you know, as long as you over deliver, then it's really hard for somebody to overpay you because you keep over delivering.
Yeah.
And it doesn't take that much to over deliver. A lot of it is just showing up and doing a good job. Because so many people don't, that showing up and doing a good job makes you in the top 10% to begin with. And so then you should get paid more.
Yeah. And what's it, the college that you teach at here? And what's part of that program? Is it like
I was at the Marshall School of Business at USC in the MBA program, and I'm not doing it anymore. They were great. USC is phenomenal. What a great place to teach. I'm just not doing it. I'm not doing it anymore.
You full time on your own stuff.
We're bringing this stuff out and getting it out to as many people as we can. Yeah.
One thing that I had while I was listening to the audiobook on repeat is, did any hostage taker ever like get hold of these techniques, or have you, now you're putting it out there, is there like, what, how does that work when they get it, or somebody gets it and you're kind of up against somebody that's doing the same thing? How does that work?
No, they're bullies, you know, and they're good at bullying. They're actually, and they have no, and they get 90% of what they want because people don't know how to deal with a bully. The crazy thing is that the procurement negotiator in most companies is exactly the same cat as the international kidnapper. And you know, they get used to getting what they want by intimidating people, and because of that, they're enormously vulnerable to this approach. I mean, they are. You know, the tactical application of empathy on them is just ridiculously effective. So, and yeah, they don't study as much as they should.
Well, that's good to know. Fantastic. Chris, thank you. To anybody, please check out Never Split the Difference. It's right there in the background. We'll put a link to the Black Swan Group website. And so you said it's The Edge that has all the newsletter that you subscribe to with,
yes,
advice and information. Yeah. It's one of my most enjoyable books I've read this year, listened to, and so I highly recommend it. So thank you for talking to us today.
My pleasure, yeah.
Thank you for listening to the Uplifting Content Podcast with me, Ione Butler. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe on iTunes and leave us a review so that more people can find it. And to make sure you never miss a beat, subscribe to our weekly dose of uplifting content, which is an email from me about the best of uplifting content from that week, be it giveaways, videos, interviews, all the good stuff. And as a bonus, when you subscribe, you'll get 100 of our inspirational memes to share on your social media. The sign-up link is in the show notes. See you next time.